We have a very delightful crossover today. The Seraphim String Quartet has come to WRTI and played in our studios, and we are all going to talk now about their careers, how they began, and how long they've been a quartet. And I think we're going to start with Kate. Now, Kate, we'll introduce everybody. Kate Ransom, you're a violinist.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's a delight to have you. Timothy Schwartz, you're a violinist as well.
Pleasure to be here.
And violist Anna Tsinadze.
Yes.
And Lauren Stomberg, cellist.
Thanks for
having
us.
That's you, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's a quartet, and they are doing some wonderful things. Kate, you want to start a little bit about a little bit of history about the Seraphim String Quartet? I do remember that there was a Seraphim String Quartet some years back.
Yes, the Seraphim String Quartet actually played its very first concert under that name in the spring of 2002. Now, the current formation of Seraphim String Quartet has been together going on 4 years now, but we had a lot of changes along the way. We tragically lost our violist unexpectedly through a car accident when he was only 38, and that was a changing moment for the group. Obviously, we had to pick ourselves up and move on, and when you change one, you change the whole. So that began a chain of changes during a short period of time that has led to the formation of this current group, which is extremely compatible, has a wonderful esprit. I think we're extremely well matched in every way that a quartet needs to be.
How does one decide to, I mean, you all started probably wanting to play as soloists. How did you ever get involved? Or was it kind of a necessity to be heard? Or was it something that you felt you'd really like to work on and make your career as, you know, known to the public?
I had the dual dreams growing up. I would occasionally, as young string players do, young musicians would occasionally have those dreams of getting out on stage and playing a concerto. But at a pretty early age myself, I actually had the dream of being a string quartet player. I got into listening to recordings of Beethoven quartets and Mozart quartets and Bartok. And so that's always been something in my life as a string player, as a musician, as a cellist, that I've wanted to do. And I think all of us, even with our various backgrounds and the various things that we do, chamber music is an important part, not just of our musical development as we were growing up, but an important part of what we want to be as musicians, too.
That's Lawrence. And I think as string players, for all of you in when you were studying, of course, that was kind of mandatory that you did chamber work. Isn't that right?
Yeah. I think it varies.
Yeah. And in college, I mean, chamber music, I went to Cincinnati College Conservatory, and chamber music was considered mandatory every semester. And what was interesting is that the LaSalle Quartet was there as well as the Tokyo Quartet. And LaSalle Quartet, which was there more permanently, they said you could not go past Haydn or Mozart until you had done at least spent a semester on Haydn and a semester on Mozart. And most student groups didn't last more than a year, no. So that was pretty much about as far as we did. I think I did the LaR Quartet about 4 times in a row. But yes, chamber music was considered.
So they formed your choices of music very early
yes,
on, I think.
Yes,
with my background, I grew up in Soviet Republic of Georgia, which fortunately right now is just Georgia.
Yes.
And in Soviet, the Russian string school, it's all inclusive. I even played piano, which was mandatory since the second grade. But I was very, very fortunate that I played in quartet, which was elective thing, really. But one of my professors wanted me to play with his violin students on third violin, which was at that time, until 14, I played violin. And then I switched to viola. So he just asked me if I would like to be in a group. So I was only 7 when I actually started.
My goodness.
And on occasion, we were not as serious, of course, as we became in conservatory in college years. But yes, and the orchestra was a very big part as well. And as a violist, you do everything later on. And as Larry said, you know, chamber music is the very, very big big dream that actually comes true once in a while for one lucky violist, because viola repertoire is really not as satisfying.
We've been there, done that. I mean it, but it is a very important instrument and actually a very beautiful one. So how long have you been here, Anna?
I've been in the country, in the USA, since 1995. And I still carry my heavy Georgian accent.
No, you speak wonderful English. So now, how did you all meet?
Well, let's see. Larry and I and Tim and I met through association joining the Seraphim String Quartet. But I think we knew each other, at least Tim and I knew each other before that, just through violin circles and music
and
circles.
I guess you're a lot of freelance playing.
Well,
did you people
I don't do. No. I don't think actually Tim or I do much freelance playing, but we had actually met maybe through some of the university circles and maybe if students that we had were playing in the same master class. I actually don't really remember how we first met.
Actually, I met Kate because I taught at the what is now the Music School of Delaware for 1 year before I was in Seraphim Quartet.
Now, so your background is where you studied at, you said...
Well, I did my undergraduate at Cincinnati, and then my master's at Peabody, and then later on got a doctorate at Temple, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but between the master's and the doctorate, there was quite a bit of time. And for 1 year, I actually taught at what was then the Wilmington Music School, now the Music School of Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
But then because I got a university fellowship at Temple, they didn't allow me to work because they were basically paying me to
sure,
go to school.
Of course.
So I had to drop that after
now,
a year.
Now, Kay, where did you study?
I went to undergraduate school at University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to graduate school at Yale. And I did postgraduate chamber music study at Juilliard.
Oh, that's wonderful. Larry, where did you?
I did my undergraduate degree at Rice University in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And then did a master's and a doctoral degree at State University of New York at Stony Brook.
Mm-hmm.
Where I studied with Timothy Eddy, who's in the Orion
yes,
Quartet.
Yes,
so I had a lot of quartet influence, certainly in graduate school.
And Anna, what was this that you studied at conservatory in Georgia?
Yes, we don't have the university level, the highest education level is a conservatory in my country. So I graduated from conservatory. I also went for postgraduate studies there, and I taught full-time. I was 25 already when I came to U.S., and then I did my master's at Louisiana State University, and my doctorate, Tim and I, we hold doctorates from Temple University. That's how we met.
That's a very fine university, Temple, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes. In fact, we met taking our entrance exams for the doctorate. Yes, that was when we first met.
Oh, aren't we lucky? Well, so. It's delightful. It's always good to know. Do you all teach? I'm sure you do.
Yes, we do.
Now, you have your first recording that came out, and it's on the Centaur label. Available, is it on Amazon.com,
yes,
I believe, or probably any of the stores, I suppose, under Centaur?
It's, every place you could look for a CD recording seems to have it now, and it's in international release as of this month.
Yes, you have American musician, American composers. You have, William Grant Still, which that's a very fascinating piece that you were playing, the Panamanian dances, and then you have the Samuel Barber String Quartet in B minor and Dvorak, and again that lovely lullaby of Gershwin. So do you specialize in American music, or is that something that just happened with this album?
Not really. We met with ideas for this particular city to have all American, with the exclusion of Dvorak, but it is American string quartet.
I was going to say, Dvorak somehow fits in because he was in New York for so many years, and I think his influence, he loved the Indian, the American Native Indian.
It's beautiful.
And so I think that one kind of thinks, okay, we'll let you in. I mean, I think
Dvorak, in his writing, really celebrated American sounds.
Yes.
And, before we had an Aaron Copland, or these other wonderful composers who also created distinctive American sounds, he found the American sounds and incorporated them into his genre.
And
so he did a great service.
I think that the more we hear of his music, the more we recognize that influence is really tremendous. How do you arrive at repertoire? Is it a kind of a throw it into the hat and we'll all talk about it? Or
well, we do. First, we look at our concert season. And particularly where all the concerts are geographically. So obviously we can't repeat programs that are in the same city. If we have three concerts in Philadelphia or three concerts in Wilmington, we need to make them diverse. And I think from there, then we just try and plan out a season that is interesting. Also looking at any special projects we have. Like right now, we're working on a project with Jennifer Higdon, recording some of her early work. So how would that fit in to a season, you know?
Who isn't working with Jennifer Higdon?
Yes, I know. She's quite popular.
She really has turned things around, much more tonal, you know, influence and so on. But now when you say your concert schedule, of course, do you do a lot locally, or do you travel around the country or abroad? Has that started yet?
We both. We travel to where the concert is, and that has included locations all around the United States. The quartet had its first overseas concert in London just recently. And, you know, we're always looking for the interesting opportunities to play on series that we haven't played on before, to advance what we're doing so that we're covering more geographic territory and reaching new audiences.
Do you favor any particular style of music? Anybody?
String quartets.
String quartets. We do a wide variety. We feel it's important to keep playing and learning from and presenting the great old works, the Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven. Mm-hmm. And we also have a great deal of interest and passion for doing new things as well. So Jennifer Higdon's project, we've championed a piece by a quartet by Morris Wright, who's actually on the Temple faculty. A wonderful composer, and we've taken that piece, actually played it. I think we gave it its New York debut a couple of years ago. And so that's important for us, I think, individually and as a group, to have that variety of experience. I think it's more interesting for the audience to have that variety of experience. And it's important for us to be able to draw the connections between the old music that we play and the new things that we're learning as well.
So you have a varied program most of the time, is that right?
Yeah. I don't think you can be a true string quartet player and not want to play all the Beethovens and not want to play all the Bartoks. But not every string quartet really does want to go into the adventuresome mode of trying things that have never been played before, premiering new works, or playing works that have been written recently, not played much. But we definitely do enjoy that as well.
Yeah, I think you have a tremendous body of work to choose from. I mean, first of all, being string players, you're spoiled, so there's just about everything available. And then string quartet, again, I think is becoming very popular. All of a sudden, I was telling our technical producer, Joe Patty, the other day, I said, we have a rash of string quartets. I mean, there are so many people that are suddenly coming through. We're going to have to devote a month to just string quartets, because it's really a suddenly very, very popular ensemble. I mean, and they're standing alone, doing a lot of repertoire, doing a lot of performance, and people are going and they're listening. It's not kind of a long hair thing anymore. And I say that from a certain generation. It was considered kind of serious. You know, classical musicians would go to chamber music concerts, particularly quartet concerts, and that's not the way it is anymore. I think you have a varied audience. Is that right?
We do collaborate as well. The quartet gives you this, it's an open door. We play, just in a couple of days, we're performing Brahms Quintet with a wonderful clarinetist who is Larry's colleague from University of Delaware, Marianne
Gutfeld.
And we played with a few pieces with baritone. I mean, we've done sextets. We collaborated with pianists quite a lot. So it is very, very rich repertoire that can be played
of course
by us.
Well, chamber. Yeah, you answered my next question, because I was going to ask you, usually add people in, or, you know, play quintets
sometimes,
or sextets or octets.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Beautiful, beautiful program that you've played today. Just a quickie about the Georgian dances. Anna, tell us a little bit about Georgia and, you know, the music of that area.
Sure. My homeland is very rich with folklore, and that includes poetry and music and multi-voice singing. And those four particular songs are from a set of many, many miniatures that Sulhan Tsintsadze, the Georgian composer from 20th century, arranged for the string quartet because he was himself an avid cellist player, and he played in a string quartet. And he made arrangement of first song on the, that we played, this Suliko, which is a very familiar tune to entire former Soviet bloc. Maybe we're introducing it for first time here. But next is Indy Mindy. It's just a funny, fast song. And then followed by Lale, which is, again, Divli Dala Lale is like trolololo, means really nothing, okay. But it does have some words if you sing the song. And the last one was Saj Idao, which is a wrestling song.
The Georgian instruments, are they, again, I sound like someone who's come from the moon, but do they, are they different? You have stringed instruments like the regular classical instrument, but are there other that are
not
indigenous to the area?
That's a very good question. As a matter of fact, the most used instrument, obviously, in folk music is voice. And we don't really have rich palitra of the instruments. There are instruments like Cianuri, which looks like Erhu a little bit,
okay.
Or bagpipe-like instrument that is Gudastviri, that I would think it precedes bagpipe, because
yes.
The Georgian culture is very ancient, as we're finding out from National Geographic lately.
Yeah.
And Larry starts that wrestling song with the imitation of a bagpipe-like instrument. And there are not that many. They're very primitive wind instruments also.
Like anything like the domra or like the you know, the balalaika kind of
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, very, very primitive ones. Mm. We don't have instruments with many strings.
And the location of Georgia for our audience is exactly?
We are surrounded with very tall Caucasus mountains on our north. And north of the Caucasus is Russia, and south of us is Turkey. Our neighbors on the east are Armenia and southeast Azerbaijan. So we're right between Black Sea and Caspian Sea.
And very, very rich, rich history and glorious music as well. So what's next now? This is the newest release. Anything immediately new that you want to discuss today?
One of the big things we're doing is we're actually have just started a residency at University of Delaware, which is very exciting. So that's obviously an ongoing thing, but that's a very big project that we're quite excited about. We're coaching chair music there, working a little bit with the orchestra, and then presenting a lot of some formal concerts, but also a lot of informal concerts. For instance, we did some of the Jennifer Higdon things for the composition class there.
A few people have asked me, it sounds very simple, but what is a residency at a university? And I kind of haltingly said, well, I think, you know, they're there and they play concerts and they have series and I imagine they would teach on some level. But what you're saying is rather interesting, how the concerts are formed and what your particular schedules include being resident ensembles.
I think there, if you look at each residency situation, it's going to be tailored to the university and the quartet that are involved. In this particular case, Seraphim String Quartet and the University of Delaware, we've developed what is a fairly diverse and rich set of responsibilities where we can work within the music department with the music students. We can also serve as ambassadors to other departments. For example, we did a program at the Global Studies Department already this fall. And then we can also reach out beyond the campus and represent the school in whatever opportunities there would be to interface beyond the campus. For example, recruitment or just representation. Of course, the fact that we are in residence is something that we're very proud of, and we appreciate the relationship. And so when we play in London or we play in Michigan or we play in the Southeast, we're going to be presenting ourselves as the resident quartet for the University of Delaware.
Now, how did you arrive at the name?
I guess I have to answer to that, but why doesn't somebody else answer?
I can take that one, sure. Well, Seraphim is the last name of Sanctus Seraphim, one of the great violin makers from long ago in the 18th century. And Kate plays a Seraphim violin. And so it was, I think the name came about pretty quickly when the very first concert happened. The presenter needed a name for the group. And so Kate said, how about Seraphim Quartet? And that stuck. And what we sort of joke about in the quartet is that Tim and Anna and myself all play instruments from a different family. Kate's this Serafin, Sancta Serafin, was from Venice. And we all play instruments in the Testore family from Milan. So we sort of joke that we're the Serafin Quartet, but we've got a lot of Testores in the family.
Well, I actually thought it was a very angelic name, so
angelic.
I'm glad we don't angels and devils. I guess we have.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's been a joy just speaking with you, and I hope that we can have you come back again with yet another project, another album. And I'm sure you have so much on your plate, but once again, a pleasure having you here, and I hope you'll return, and good luck, and keep us posted. Thank you.
Thank you very much.